Yo, what's up? It's Bryce, and on today's show, we're going to cover a number of important questions raised around the league to help you get a better idea on how to feel about players, teams, and rookies going into the 2020 season. Let's roll.
Streaming from beautiful Portland, Oregon, for all things fantasy football. This is the Tutty Talk Podcast.
Barkley with a burst. Barkley down the sideline. Saquon Barkley.
Jackson himself. Look at him turn back and forth. Oh, he broke his ankles.
He did what? It's a C-Mac attack.
I'm really not into dreams anymore, okay? I'm into nightmares.
A lot of people ain't going to be able to take that over and over and over and over and over and over and over. And over and over and over and over and over again.
You like that?
Here are your hosts, Bryce Wells.
I'm gonna say it. I'm gonna put you on blast.
Kevin Nelson.
It's a damn shame because Pete Carroll is wasting Russell Wilson, and there's nothing we can do about it.
And Chase Daskalos.
No! Lamar Jackson is gonna be a top five quarterback.
Welcome back to the Tutty Talk Podcast. We told you last week we're going to keep it coming. We're 2 weeks away from the draft, but that doesn't mean the show stops. We've got stuff to go over today, and today we're going to cover it all. We're going to hit some actual football talk, a little less fantasy, but still dive into fantasy at the same time. Kevin, how you doing today?
It all comes back to fantasy football. But we can talk about the teams and which ones absolutely suck. So, yeah, it'll be fun. It'll be a fun show. I'm excited. We're trying to go, like, show sheetless as much as we can, which is good. I think that's, like, a good flow to, like, kind of break things up a little bit from the mundane kind of, oh, we're talking about this guy for 30 minutes. So it'll be a good show.
Yeah, just a little more casual, a little more relaxed. So, like I said, we're going to spitball today. We've got some stuff we still want to talk about. I'm not looking at a show sheet, and just right off the dome right now. Chase, how are you doing today?
What's up, boys? I'm well. We have a lot of stuff to talk about, is what I was going to say. Nothing in particular, just a whole bunch of stuff, a whole bunch of football stuff, a bunch of guy stuff to talk about right now. So I also have a super flex best ball draft here at 7 o'clock that you might hear me clicking around on. So I'll do my best to stay with you guys, but also dominate this draft. So
yeah, you've been doing pretty well in those drafts, right? You were talking through us on one of them. I think it was last week or maybe over the weekend, and it sounded like you had a pretty good squad. Do you know that off the top of your head by any chance?
Gosh. Let me pull it up. I'm going to talk while I do it. But kind of what I've been doing right now is I've just been doing these drafts so I can kind of get a good idea of where people are going right now, how people feel about players, you know, kind of freshly coming off the 2019 season to see, you know, who's a value, who's getting overdrafted, and who to target here coming up. So my receiving core is insane for best ball. I mean, just off the top here, Amari Cooper, Tyreek Hill, Hollywood Brown, Mecole Hardman, Christian Kirk, Terry McLaurin, DJ Moore, and Cortland Sutton. That shouldn't even be possible.
Right. I would have totally.
I don't even know how I pulled that. And what happened was one of these, I'm going to talk about Leonard Fournette later. I have Leonard Fournette, Joe Mixon, not a big fan of David Johnson, but for best ball, who knows? David Johnson, Jonathan Taylor, Justice Hill, Tony Pollard at running back. So I feel like that team is completely stacked.
Oh, my.
Yeah, that sounds nice. That's a good start to the best ball 2020 season for sure. And you did a ton of that last year, and it sounded like you came out on top, made a little money, which is the ultimate goal in best ball. So let's go ahead and jump into our first topic of discussion here. We're going to talk about 2020 AFC and NFC worst teams to first. I'm going to read you off my top AFC teams and my worst AFC teams. And I'm going to have Kevin start and just point something out that doesn't really quite sound right to you, based on where I think teams are going to finish in the AFC. And then we'll move on to the NFC. which I know is more your realm, Kevin. So starting with AFC, and this is worst to first, I start with Jags at the very bottom, then the Jets, then the Bengals, then the Dolphins, then the Pats, Colts, Chargers, Raiders, Texans, Browns, Steelers, Broncos, Titans, Bills, Ravens, Chiefs.
Yeah, what? I think that the top of this is pretty easy to look at and go, yeah, that's it. I mean, Vegas has all those teams up there, kind of excluding the Bills, who were all three of us are really high on the Bills after last season, 10-6. If they don't play in the AFC East with the Patriots all these years, they probably would have a couple more AFC titles. And, you know, that they've got a good young team. They just add Stephon Diggs to the passing game, too. Probably going to draft a running back, and that defense is always really good. Yeah, we like the Bills up there, and I like them where you have them at third best in the AFC, and the winners of the AFC East, finally, New England's off the throne. Now, what's really weird is where Vegas has the New England Patriots.
Let me find it.
I think while you're looking for that, what stands out to me on my own list that I think people would maybe find some problems with, how low I am on the Pats. I have them as the fifth worst team in the AFC. You're looking that up.
Yeah,
right,
18 to 1 odds, which,
yeah, that's wild.
Is insane given that we don't know who their quarterback is going to be. Now, if that's Cam Newton, yeah, sure, I'd put him at 18 to 1 and probably a contender. That shows to me how bad the AFC is. That a team without an offense, realistically, I mean, they were horrible last year, just couldn't move the ball, but they did have the best defense in the league and a fantasy god for you for most, yeah, of the season. I mean, if you played defenses and you had the Patriots defense, which was probably the fifth, sixth,
I think they were the seventh through
off the board.
Yeah, yeah, for 10 weeks.
You won your league. I mean, that's how dominant they were. So outside of the Patriots, I don't know. You're a Broncos fan, so I kind of just ignore that wherever you've got them. Realistically, I feel like they're a middle of the road team still until we see something, which is kind of bottom-ish of the AFC. You know, are they as bad as the Jags, the Jets, the Bengals, the Dolphins, and probably the Colts, maybe even the Texans? No. Are they a little bit ahead of them? Yes. The whole AFC West outside of the Chiefs are right in this middle territory as well. Everybody's hating on the Chargers right now, and I don't get it. Like, if they sign Cam Newton or Jameis Winston and get the offense going like it kind of was last year, on top of the additions that they made in the secondary, that's the best secondary in the NFL. That alone in a passing league right now is going to win them a ton of games. So they fight fire with fire going against the Chiefs. The Raiders are going to have a better passing offense, and the Broncos hope to as well. Like, that is perfect for that division that can really lock down, I feel like, two of those three offenses. So I think the biggest regression, the team that's going to slide the most, is the Texans in the AFC. They were 10-6 last year, and I just don't see it with, obviously, the moves that Bill O'Brien has made. They haven't really surrounded Deshaun Watson with the weapons that he needs and what really is an offense-first type of a team. So I feel like they slide potentially into the bottom five in the AFC. And then the kind of sleeper teams, which I would lump Denver into this, are Pittsburgh, Cleveland, and Denver. We were all really high on the Titans last year, and now I would say at the end of last year, we weren't high on them going into the season, of course. But remember, they finished 9-7. Everybody's freaking out about Tennessee and, oh, they're all back and ready to go. Okay, yeah, they barely made the playoffs. If they can do that again and make the cut, I'd be excited to see them, because running teams in bad weather and playoff time usually do pretty well. But they got to get there first. And it's going to be tough for Ryan Tannehill to lead a team, I think, all season, regardless of how things wrapped up last year. So Chiefs and Ravens at the top, the Bills are up there as well, and then really, honestly, everybody else.
Yeah, just a couple of points to add here. Those 18-1 odds for the Patriots, that was seventh best in the NFL. That is not happening. They're not even close to being the seventh best team.
No.
I'm not going to run through my whole standings here, but I have Baltimore at one. Surprise, surprise. And Kevin, without even communicating with me, you mentioned them, the worst team in the AFC next year, the Houston Texans.
Whoa, yeah.
They're going to be terrible. The worst team. That's what I have written down. The worst team in the AFC next year is going to be the Houston Texans.
It might be tough to beat Jacksonville at that, but I mean, they are going to regress a ton. a ton.
I like Jacksonville pieces more.
They, I mean, they blew it up too. They keep dropping guys left and right. Name a guy. I mean, outside of the offense of DJ Chark and Gardner Minshew and
Leonard guys, Fournette. Wait, guys. What? I mean, the Texans have David Johnson now. So, I mean, they're a contender now, right? Like, that's a win now move, right?
Oh, no.
Deshaun Watson's really good, but knowing what Bill O'Brien is capable of in the worst way possible.
See, I have
no faith in the Houston Texans.
I'm not even sold on Deshaun Watson with nothing around him. I mean, there are very few quarterbacks that can do that. One of them we're going to talk about here in a minute, but
so
I don't think Deshaun Watson's one of them.
I just want to cover a couple teams real quick, and I'll just say something quick for each one of them. The Patriots, they retain the majority of the defense. It's just that offense is probably the biggest question mark on in the AFC. It all comes down to whether or not they get a quarterback. They have to get more weapons on the offense. Sony Michel, I don't even know what they're going to do with that man anymore. They just run him until he breaks, which he's almost already there. Stidham's not the answer at quarterback. I know we haven't seen really anything from Stidham, but I just don't think that they're committed to that guy. I think they made a claim about that earlier this week. I think the Texans are really bad, like you guys have been saying. That division's kind of up for grabs, right? I mean, the Colts are right there, and I think, you know, Tennessee still has to come out on top of that division, which vaults them into the playoffs. I just don't see the Colts, the Jags, or the Texans really making a push to compete in that division against the Titans, who have a great defense. They retained the majority of all their players, so I don't think the team's a whole lot different. It just comes down to whether or not Tannehill can be a quality quarterback for the majority of the season and to really just get them there. So it's hard for me to push the Titans outside of that playoff picture. I think where it gets messy is where the Browns, the Steelers, the Broncos, and probably the Raiders are in that mix too. Kevin, you're right. There's a huge number of teams in that middle area where anybody could take a spot. I'm obviously incredibly high on the Broncos going into this season. A lot of people are not high on the Broncos whatsoever, and it comes down to Drew Lock. The defense is going to be better than it was last year. They lost four games by game-winning field goals. They take those four wins. They're making the playoffs, and the division's getting better. We all know that. The Chargers are going to be healthy, hopefully find a quarterback. The Raiders are going to add a ton of new guys, but they're all going to be young, and I don't really think that the Raiders have enough experience on the offense and defense to really make a push for the playoffs. So I think the Broncos are in the mix at that number two spot in the AFC West. They can find their way in as a wild card team. And honestly, I don't even know what to think about the Browns, because I was so high on them last year after the addition of Odell that I thought that was going to be one of the best offenses in the league. I lost the bet because I thought they were going to make the playoffs. So I'm kind of taking a step back from that. I don't really know if this team's getting better. So that's just kind of where I'm at with some of those teams that people would maybe think on this list that I just read off as somewhat questionable on where I'm ranking them. So that's just kind of where I'm at.
Yeah, I think kind of the last little bit here before we move on to the NFC is like the Raiders made so many moves, and I'm not trying to gas them up too much because Chase is a huge Raider fan. Bryce is a huge Raider hater. But adding guys like Jason Witten, Marcus Mariota, really sneaky guys, Corey Littleton at linebacker, like they are like this weird old young team where if you look at, and history will tell you this, like the teams with this weird mix of youth and experience, that's kind of what the Raiders have right now after one free agency. And they're going to have a quarterback competition. We'll see if Marcus beats out Carr, but they've got a young, you know, running back, and the offensive line played okay last year. I just think that if they're in contention here, man, coming down the stretch, It's going to be fun to watch the Raiders be competitive again like we saw them a few years ago, because I just think football's better when the Raiders are good.
No, and it's been great since they've been better.
The AFC West in general is going to be really, really competitive, I think, this year. I think two or maybe three teams make the playoffs now that we have that extra spot, with seven teams making the playoffs for each conference. So, yeah, it'll be wild.
A sneaky addition that I like that the Raiders made too is – not for fantasy football or whatever. He's dead for fantasy. He has been. But Nelson Aguilar is their fourth receiver.
Jesus. Yeah.
Fifth receiver, just kind of slotting him in there. A veteran presence there. I really like that addition too.
Who knows if he just needed a change of scenery? You know, how many times does the guy just go to a new place and he's a different player? So
all right, let's move on to the NFC. At last I have the Lions, and then it's the Redskins, then it's Atlanta, the Panthers, the Bears, the Rams, the Cardinals, the Vikings, the Cowboys, the Giants, the Eagles, the Bucks, the Packers, the Niners, the Hawks, and then the Saints. I think Kevin had a lot more issue with this conference ranking that I put out there. So I'm going to just hand this one off to Kevin. Go ahead and break into it. What stands out to you?
I think the main things that stand out to me, first of all, is when you're comparing the NFC and the AFC, there's still a gap. There is most of the teams contending for playoff spots in the AFC at that, you know, outside of Baltimore, Buffalo, and Kansas City, are in the middle section of the league. They are mediocre teams that will make the playoffs. And the NFC, I think it's more consistency of their two or three good teams per division. And you see that in here, which is really hard to rank them. I think the Saints are easily the best team in the NFC right now, with the roster that they have and bringing back Drew Brees. So you can pin them there. After that, it's like so hard to place teams. Immediately, I want to say Seattle, but it's not. They were so bad defensively last year, and it was so much on the shoulders of Russell Wilson and saving game after game after game, that I don't know if he could do that again. I hope he can, but I don't know if he can. So you having them at two, I think, is too high. The Niners have a great defense, and they'll try and ride that again with the running game. So I maybe put them there. Then the Packers, the Buccaneers are just way too high on this list. Vegas has them way up there at sixth best odds to win the Super Bowl this year. That means everybody's buying in. Everybody's buying on the Bucs right now. So they just jack that up to kind of save themselves. The Eagles are going to be a good team if they're healthy. Everybody was so high on them last. Oh, they're the most talented team in football. They're going to be so good. I mean, it's out on All or Nothing on Amazon. Really great show. If you want to check that out, last season, it's basically Hard Knocks throughout the whole season. They covered the Eagles. And sure, Philadelphia media gassing up their team before the start of the year. They're all thinking they're going back to the Super Bowl, and things didn't go their way. The injury bug got them. But if that team's healthy, they very well could be a Super Bowl contender. Don't forget about Dallas. They were, you know, improved on defense with the young guys that they had. Sure, they have a couple key losses in there as well. But don't sleep on Dak Prescott and the Cowboys. The Vikings, I think, regress a ton. I think they could be one of the worst teams in the NFC this year. They lost a ton of guys. Dalvin Cook's going into a contract year. He's going to have a hell of a year like he did last year and stay healthy with the injuries that he's had. It's hard to imagine a season where Dalvin plays 16 games. Probably you're hoping for 15 or 14.
I have a question though. If you think the Vikings are one of the worst teams in the NFC, I feel like that might play into this Dalvin contract. Like, do you really think they're going to re-sign him if they fall into that ladder, you know, the bottom half of the NFC?
Yeah, so they're going to make it a premium to sign him regardless. It's just like what they did when they had Adrian Peterson. You know, they had him for years. They had to go through the same exact thing. History repeats itself, man. They have a great running back. They're going to sign him to a stupid contract. They're going to let good players go that make the overall team better to keep a superstar there. And Dalvin isn't what AP was. So, you know, contracts are much different now than they were back then when AP was signing those deals to stay in Minnesota. Eventually that well is going to run dry. And when the well runs dry, the team sucks. So they're going to start paying money. Fuck, they paid Kirk Cousins. This is a team that just makes bad deals. They traded Stephon Diggs. You know, like,
they did get a good haul for that, though.
They did, and they're hoping to rebuild with that. But again, they're low on money and they're low on talent. So I don't believe in them at all. The Rams, they still have a lot of talent on defense. You know, I think the NFC West, I'm biased, is the best division in football. And I don't think it's really close either. Arizona, up and coming, great offense. San Francisco went to the Super Bowl last year. The Rams, yeah, they're probably on one of their last competitive years before they have to blow it up. But they still have Aaron Donald, Jalen Ramsey. You know, Jared Goff does what he does. They're going to draft a running back probably in this draft, which we're high on the top four or five guys. On top of Cooper Kupp, Brandon Cooks, Robert Woods, Tyler Higbee, what's not to like, you know? I think we're kind of caught up in, oh, the Rams sucked last year and they were hurt and didn't live up to expectations. But the Rams are a sneaky team, and kind of same with the Bears. You know, if Nick Foles gets hot like he did in Philly, they could surge in the NFC North. So there's just so many teams that you have one, two, three, four, five from the worst team in the league or worst team in the division or in the conference, sorry, that if you look at those teams in the AFC, they're not even fucking close to being competitive.
So I went pretty cookie cutter with mine. I have the Saints at one, the Redskins, in last, but one of the teams I wanted to talk about, or the divisions at least, is the NFC West in Seattle and San Francisco and Arizona and the Rams. I think we could be living in a world here where the Seahawks win the division, the Cardinals finish second, and I've said this before, I have a side bet with a buddy that the San Francisco 49ers not even making the playoffs, and we see an Arizona Cardinals surge.
Yeah,
that's hot.
It wouldn't be shocking, would it? I mean,
to go 500 against every team in that division would be a good 2020 year. I think that's the best case scenario, right?
At the end of the day, when we look at this list. Yeah, exactly. At the end of the day, we look at this list and you go, what quarterbacks are where? You know, who wins games? And you look right at the top of the list. Saints, Seattle, Green Bay, Dallas should be up there. Those are Eagles, Philly, you know, Carson Wentz almost had an MVP season. Kyler Murray, he's coming. I mean, second year breakout, here it comes. Get ready for it. They gave him all the tools in the world to be successful. They're going to shred. And that defense in San Francisco, as talented as it was last year, you know, you got to be healthy to be good. You got to be lucky to be good. They won the division by literally half an inch. If Jacob Hollister doesn't fall into the end zone, they don't win the division, and they're on the road for the first week of the playoffs. So maybe they don't even go back to the Super Bowl. So,
Who gave them problems last year? Twice?
Yes.
The Cardinals.
Yes. It ran up the score. Wow, what happened to that defense all of a sudden? So NFC is going to be a ton of fun to watch this year. Even teams like, you know, we hate on them, but Atlanta and Carolina, I mean, shit, they're still going to be very fantasy relevant. They're going to be on TV all the time, as bad as their defenses are. Yeah, there's just so many players. I think outside of the Lions and the Redskins, I wouldn't be shocked to see any of these teams win their division.
I feel like I am slightly low on the Cowboys. I put them at the middle of the pack, not even making playoffs. However, every year we say this. We say, watch out for Dak. You can't count out Dak and the Cowboys, and then they always underperform. And I think we're under the assumption that Mike McCarthy's going to come in and really change this whole thing up. And he might possibly do that. But it's hard to put the Cowboys in this playoff picture when I really truly think the Eagles are the ones that are going to bounce back, because they were the ones that were unlucky last year. They were the ones that were injury riddled, having lost all their receiving options, and their defense was abysmal. So that's the team I think is really going to bounce back in 2020. And so I think you're going to see the Eagles in that contention, which means, you know, the Packers are fighting in there. I don't think the Niners are going to be as bad as Chase thinks they're going to be next year. I think they're going to make playoffs like they're expected to do. And I think, you know, they're going to have to obviously add a wide receiver to make a more of an offensive push to vault them there. But I really like the Eagles going into 2020. I'm trying to buy myself into it, and I've kind of got there. And I think what they're going to have to do is they're going to have to involve Miles Sanders more, which we're going to talk about that now. I mean,
throw me a bone here.
I'm going to throw you a bone here. Yeah. Chase has been all over this, and so I'm going to pass this along. But I'll just throw out the question: could Miles Sanders be the next Christian McCaffrey?
So there's this dude out in Philadelphia, somehow still flying under the radar. His name is Miles Sanders. This Miles Sanders guy looks incredibly similar to Christian McCaffrey. And yes, I just said Christian McCaffrey. So starting with their profiles, which is what's shockingly similar, is both are 5'11", 211. They're literally the exact same weight. McCaffrey came into the league at 202, but we've all seen the picture of him doing the speed ladder or whatever with his little cutoff hoodie and his guns when, oh my God, Christian McCaffrey's huge. So he was 202. After that picture interview, he told ESPN he was now 211. So it's kind of shockingly similar. Both are literally 5'11", 211. Miles Sanders' 40 time is 4.49. Christian McCaffrey's is 4.48. Exact same speed. Where they differ a little bit is Miles' speed score is a little higher, 76th percentile to CMC's 66th, but that was because of the 9-pound difference. So, I mean, those are pretty similar there. Their burst is 74th percentile to 79th, and agility is 84th percentile for Miles, and CMC's is actually 98th percentile. And then we don't really care about bench press that much, but Miles put up 20 reps and McCaffrey put up 10. And now where I'm going to dive into is their rookie stats. And what I'm saying is that Miles Sanders flying under the radar is pretty crazy when you compare his stats to what Christian McCaffrey did as a rookie. So Miles actually averaged 4.6 yards per carry. McCaffrey was 3.7. And where I'm going to go with this is that I think Miles Sanders is a really, 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 really underappreciated receiver coming out of the backfield. He's insane. 10.2 yards per reception as a rookie to McCaffrey's 8.1. A big shocking number here is that Miles Sanders had 1,327 scrimmage yards as a rookie, 6 touchdowns. McCaffrey just got over 1,000, 7 touchdowns. 5.8 yards per touch for Miles Sanders to Christian McCaffrey's 5.5. And where Miles Sanders brings the sauce is his juke rate, 32.8%. Super elusive. We know how elusive McCaffrey is. As a rookie, he was 26.9%, so 32.8 for Miles Sanders. And then another telling metric here is yards created per carry. Miles Sanders, 1.51 yards created per carry, basically doubled Christian McCaffrey's as a rookie at 0.86. You might be thinking, and this is totally valid, is this was 3 years later or 2 years later, they have different O-lines, completely different situations. What's interesting is that the Eagles' run blocking efficiency last year in 2019 was 28th in the NFL, and Carolina's for Christian McCaffrey was 21st in the NFL in 2017. So Miles Sanders could finish as a top three running back in 2020. I wouldn't be shocked by it at all. He's that good.
Damn. Yeah, that's I want to believe it. Okay, I do. I really like Miles Sanders. I drafted him last year at the 105 ahead of Josh Jacobs, thinking that he was the better running back.
Yeah.
I think the things that stand out to me is this narrative that Doug Peterson and the running back by committee story is just what people stick to when they talk about Miles Sanders. So it makes you wonder whether or not they're going to go out and try to draft somebody to fill in to share some of the load. Not to mention they still are limited at wide receiver, and their defense is still awful. So they're going to be forced to throw the ball more. The good news for Sanders is he's a good receiving back. So that might actually benefit him in the long run. Do I think he's Christian McCaffrey? No, I don't. I don't see a number one fantasy finish for Miles Sanders in his career. That's obviously very, you know, that's a speculation because I don't know how his career is going to pan out. But I think he definitely is in that top 10, and you should be looking to draft Sanders in your seasonal drafts and your dynasty startups as well as a possible number one guy on your running back on your lineup.
How many times did Carson Wentz miss Miles Sanders out of the backfield on like an easy dump off, probably walk-in touchdown? It felt like most of them were close to the red zone last year. I just remember so many times Miles Sanders just flaring out like on a delayed wheel route or something, you know, wide open in the flat, and Wentz just airmails it. So shit, if they just hit on those. But that's what's so nice about Miles Sanders, right, is he's on the field all the time. Like, he doesn't need to come off. And now Jordan Howard's gone. You know, there's probably going to be another running back in there eventually that they like to run more running backs. But the talent of Miles Sanders, I think, far outweighs whoever they bring in. And eventually, you know, Coach Peterson's just going to have to go, shit, this is our guy. Like, he's an every down guy.
So I see it playing out really similar to how Christian McCaffrey had Jonathan Stewart there. And I was looking at their Jonathan Stewart and Christian McCaffrey splits in 2017. And it was basically started out the same thing as Miles Sanders, where, you know, Miles went in the second and Christian McCaffrey, was, I think, was a top 10 pick. But, you know, starting out, it's Jonathan Stewart, 17, 18 carries a game. Christian McCaffrey's getting it 5 or 6. And fantasy gamers, everyone who has him in Dynasty and playing him in fantasy is like, get this guy. It's the same thing we saw with Miles Sanders this year. Is get this guy the ball. Get Jordan Howard. Get Jonathan Stewart off the field. You spent the draft pick on him. We know he's good. Fade Jonathan Stewart, Jordan Howard. Get this guy the ball. And I feel like now with Jordan Howard gone, they haven't made any other moves. Like, we saw the Chiefs picked up DeAndre Washington. They haven't picked up a single veteran running back yet. You know, the only guy behind him right now is Boston Scott, who is, he's not going to hurt his fantasy value at all. So I think it's wheels up for old Mr. Sanders.
Maybe Boston Scott does get a little more action, just like that Darren mm-hmm. Sproles role. I think that's definitely right. Possible too. Yeah. Kind of sticking with the second year players. Let's move on to our next topic. Mecole Hardman or N'Keal Harry. Now, before we dive into this, just make this clear, 2019 rookie drafts, N'Keal Harry was your wide receiver one. I can't remember where Mecole Hardman landed on that list. However, now I would say Mecole Hardman definitely has the edge on N'Keal Harry, should be drafted ahead of Harry going forward. He's on the better offense. He's got the best quarterback in the league. He's super fast. He's an insurance policy for Tyreek Hill because Tyreek Hill has to stay on the field. You know, I think this one's a pretty easy choice now, which is wild to say because I think, you know, at 2019, we're going into rookie drafts. You were just telling me Mecole Hardman was going to do better than N'Keal Harry. I wouldn't have believed you. So I'm starting to buy into the Mecole Hardman stuff. I think that's partly in fault of Chase just throwing numbers at me left and right. Yeah, that's kind of where I'm at with Mecole. I think that if you had to put them side by side, you're definitely taking Mecole, and it's not even close.
Yeah. So why I really wanted to bring this up is not, I mean, we all know my love for Mecole, but I really wanted to like take a step back and look at it now, like you mentioned, and compare their two paths from draft night, the NFL draft, until now. N'Keal Harry was the consensus wide receiver one. He went in the first round. He was actually the second receiver off the board because following the narrative of what the NFL is going for now, the Ravens took Hollywood Brown instead of, which I mean, I would at this point, yeah, I'd rather have Hollywood Brown than N'Keal Harry, but AJ Brown, DK Metcalf, those guys. I'm trying to picture like AJ Brown in Baltimore offense. Oh my God.
That'd be nice.
But anyways, N'Keal Harry consensus wide receiver one. And then when Mecole's drafted in the second round, he was a, who the hell is that guy? I exactly. remember like, I didn't yeah. even know who he was. Most people did not even know who he was. Had no clue. And comparing him now from wide receiver one to who is this guy? N'Keal looks like a bust, and it's only looking worse now with Tom Brady leaving and probably Jared Stidham rolling out for the Patriots. Like, good God. And then you have Mecole Hardman, who I'm going to roll through some stats here, but he's a Super Bowl champion. And I know that doesn't have to do anything with fantasy, but like just comparing the two, it's jaw dropping how quickly situations can change and player value can change. And it would be come from guys that I remember a lot of experts saying that N'Keal Harry's bust proof. And that what the yeah. hell are the Chiefs doing?
I remember that. Yeah.
So pretty crazy. So I sent out a tweet. We mentioned it a little bit on the last pod, but some of these metrics about Mecole Hardman was super cool because he replied to it on Twitter. He quoted it and basically was saying, look at me. Roto Underworld quoted it and was talking about their data analysis stuff. So let me see. I actually don't even know if I
Well, while you're looking for that, I think the one thing that N'Keal has going for him now in dynasty formats is the fact that he is cheaper. You know, you could pay a mid to late second for N'Keal Harry versus Mecole Hardman, who I think at the worst is a late first, right? So it's not really a gamble taking a shot at Mecole Hardman at this point, because I think we can all assume that they want to get that man more involved in the offense. You're giving more options for Patrick Mahomes and options that are faster than the rest of the league. It's pretty crazy how fast things can change in a season.
Yeah, so the things that I tweeted about was that in 2019, Mecole was number one in the NFL in yards per reception, number one in the NFL in yards per target, number one in target premium, number one in quarterback rating when targeted, and number one in fantasy points per target. So we do have to mention, unfortunately, the signing of DeMarcus Robinson and Sammy Watkins, and that's going to hurt a little bit. But I've kind of divvied up their targets here, and Sammy Watkins got – I don't know why. This just blows my mind that Sammy Watkins is getting seven targets per game in the Chiefs' offense, DeMarcus Robinson four, and Mecole Hardman 2.5. So if somehow we can get Mecole to 5.5 targets a game, you know, take away freaking – we need three more targets for him. Take away two from Sammy and one from DeMarcus Robinson and give it to Mecole. And if we actually reduce his efficiency, he was 2.75 fantasy points per target last year. Like I said, number one in the NFL. If we can reduce that to 2.25, because regression is going to happen, say he misses one game, he would finish as wide receiver 13 in 2019. With that decrease in efficiency and uptick in targets, that'd be ahead of DJ Moore, DJ Chark, John Brown, Jarvis Landry, Stephon Diggs, Tyler Lockett, and Cortland Sutton.
And I mean, you factor in a little bit that last year was a down year for wide receivers, but still, I mean, the numbers speak for themselves. A lot of those where you're ripping off, you know, number one, number one, number one. That's not for rookies. That's number one in the NFL. And, you know, I think that, not saying that Mecole's bad or anything like that, I think he is super talented and super versatile, but situation matters. If you go to New England and the offense sucks and they're unable to drive the ball down the field, you are fantasy irrelevant to me. It just isn't work. It doesn't work as a wide receiver. So yeah, N'Keal Harry's value drops, Bryce, like you mentioned, from 101 in some leagues like ours, unfortunately, to, you know, mid second, late second round pick. Why do you want him? Why would you want N'Keal Harry on your team? He's the only guy there outside of Julian Edelman. Okay. They got to throw it to somebody. Yeah. But you're not excited about getting N'Keal Harry now, are you?
I mean, I think the only – if we're going to make a case for N'Keal Harry, I think the things that stand out are Edelman's getting a year older. He doesn't have Tom Brady anymore. So the targets have to go somewhere. And Sonny Michel's not catching out of the backfield. That's James White's job. So N'Keal Harry, to me, is still second fiddle to Julian Edelman. But the targets, once again, still have to go somewhere. That defense is really good. They will be on the field, you know, more times because the offense is so poor. But there is a shining light. It's not very big. It's tiny. It's at the end of the tunnel that you could see N'Keal Harry still producing, and he got hurt last year, so we have to give him the benefit of the doubt here.
But if you're a N'Keal owner, you're not even selling him because you paid so much to get him. You're not just going to bail now. Like you got to hold on to him for at least another season, at least.
For sure. I would say even until after year three, you know, because
contract.
Right, and usually that's on average where wide receivers are breaking out in the first place. But it kind of has a – it almost has a Corey Davis feel to me. It's very similar. Two players that were expected to do extremely well out the gate. And for the most part, Corey Davis did start off decently. But now we're at this point where Corey Davis, we don't know what to do with him. N'Keal Harry's in the same boat. So situation-wise, I think they're both kind of similar. And that's where I'm at. Chase, you have anything else to add on Mecole?
No, I'm just pissed off at my fantasy league or my fantasy football, whatever, MFL, and their stupid format is shit. We bitched about sleeper last time. I can't figure out my draft started the last 5 minutes. I just got fucking auto-picked because I can't figure out how to run their stupid interface.
All right. Well, let's move on. We're going to stick with wide receiver on this. this is one I brought up because I was trying to move him. But the question is, Cortland Sutton or Kenny Golladay? I'm a Kenny Golladay owner. I'm trying to just get another pick, right? So I reach out to the Cortland Sutton owner, and I'm asking for Sutton Plus. And it was a hard pass at this point for this dynasty owner. The problem that he's having is that Cortland Sutton's just 2 years younger, right? Kenny Golladay finished as your wide receiver, what, 6 or 7 last year? So I had a hard time understanding, because his team isn't completely, it's not a rebuild mode, right? And for the most part, the two players had a very similar first 2 years in the league. Sutton had done slightly better. However, last year, Matt Stafford, when he was playing, was one of the top quarterbacks in fantasy. And Golladay was, to me, if you're trying to bypass some of this rebuild, quote unquote rebuild, why wouldn't you just pay a little bit more on top of Sutton to get a better wide receiver that you know is already a top 10 option and going into the next few seasons, and he's still in his prime. There's nothing wrong with him. The only problem is Matt Stafford is staying healthy. The offense is going to be on the field a lot. They're going to have to throw the ball because they don't have a running back that can also stay on the field. And overall, the value that Kenny Golladay brings to the table is so much bigger than what Cortland Sutton's going into, especially now that we're talking about what rookie wide receiver is going to land in Denver and possibly script some of the production of Cortland Sutton. And to me, Sutton had to develop when he first came in. He was raw. Kenny Golladay wasn't as raw as Cortland Sutton was coming into the league. And so to me, Kenny Golladay is I think kind of lurking in the back for top wide receiver options for fantasy owners and going into seasonal and dynasty. And it just blows my mind. Maybe it's just because I'm an owner of Kenny Golladay. I don't know. I don't know what the problem is there, but I think Sutton in a second on top for Kenny Golladay is completely fair trade. Something that owners should be looking to do just because like you guys feel this way, that you're just not sure what Denver's going to do on offense with Drew Locke under center. So for me, if you have Sutton and you have a second and you're trying to get better and you're not in a rebuild, Kenny Golladay should be that target. How do you guys feel about that?
I'm not as high on Kenny G as you are. I feel like there's other guys that you could, like, some people really love Cortland Sutton, and you know, just you watch his tape, he makes highlight catch after highlight catch. I feel like diving catches in the end zone and things like that, his size and speed, and he is the number one option in Denver. Sure, the questions with Drew Locke, but I feel like now is a great time to sell him. You know, he had a productive season last year. Do you sell now or hope that he plays better than what one of these older guys, maybe if you're in win now mode? You know, I feel like you could get something greater than Kenny Golladay. Given the health of Matt Stafford, I really worry about, you know, what happens if Stafford goes down, which he kind of does every year now. I know he played with a broken back one season. Like, he's tough as nails. He's one of the toughest quarterbacks in the league. But I worry about bad teams in general and having a fantasy player on that team. You put Detroit as your worst team in the NFC. So, I mean, that alone worries me as far as any sort of fantasy production. Like, that definitely takes a hit a little bit, where I think that you could package Cortland Sutton in a second. I don't know for who off the top of my head, ripping here, but for something maybe a little bit better than Golladay. If you believe in Golladay, go for it.
I think I'm
there with you, Bryce, but
I think where I disagree with you on that is even when the backup came in, Kenny Golladay was still maintaining that top 10 wide receiver production. And then we talk about down wide receiver years, blah, blah, blah. But regardless, it didn't matter. And Detroit was one of the worst teams last year. And Golladay was still able to continue on and be the force that he is. So that's where I'm a little lost.
We insert all this talent into the league, though, this year. So many times we've talked about it on the pod. Time's running out for these top receivers, you know, the older guys in the league that have been there forever, the Julios of the world. AJ Green's going to be done here soon. Stuff like that. There's a changing of the guard from quarterback to wide receiver, running back, especially this year, with the guys that are coming in and having their second, third years too. I would rather have one of those guys or multiple of those guys right now than a Kenny G, who's an older receiver on a bad team.
I mean, he's 26. I don't think that he qualifies as old. You know, that's where I think everybody thinks he's this really old receiver because he came into the league older than the rest. Kind of similar to Calvin Ridley, who came into the NFL at 23. And I just think you have 2,000-yard receiving years under your belt. You know what you have with them. You know what that offense is going to have to do to stay in games. And if anything, I kind of like the fantasy option that's on one of the worst teams in the NFL that is forced to throw. And I think that actually benefits him more than having all these other options to throw to, because it hasn't really other options haven't really, you know, made him worse. Even Marvin Jones, you know, dips in there every once in a while. But for the most part, Kenny G was fairly consistent throughout the year. So I'm just a little different on that with you. But Chase, go ahead.
Yeah, what I was going to say is it's crazy how shockingly similar their profiles are. They're like the same guy. It's pretty interesting. On player profile, they're actually both comped to Alshon Jeffrey. And that's who comes to mind when you think of, like, obviously when you think of Courtland Sutton and Kenny Galladay. I think the dynasty value is what the difference is, basically, in what Kevin was talking about, in that Kenny G is going to be playing his 27-year-old season coming up next year. Matt Stafford's 32, going to be going on 33. And we know the injury history with Stafford, and that in this blink of an eye, snap of a finger, Stafford could be done. Kenny G's 28 all of a sudden, and he's got nobody throwing to him. I know he produced pretty well with David Blau and Jeff Driscoll. But I think that's just the difference. I don't know, honestly. They're dead equal to me. I would take one for the other in Dynasty. I like Matt Stafford better than Drew Locke. It's like, I think I texted you today, I think it's just the slight age difference. And Courtland Sutton is an older prospect. He's going to be 24, 25. He's in the same class as DJ Moore, who's like 22. So I honestly just think the difference is those 2 years.
Anything else, Kevin?
Moving on.
All right. Let's go into third year breakout wide receivers. Now, I think for the most part, these receivers have already kind of had a little mini breakout, especially a guy on this list, DJ Chark's already there. But Sutton, Gallup, Calvin Ridley. Of those three, I think I'm just high on Gallup for some reason. I just have this feeling that Gallup is going to be the number one guy in Dallas, because Amari Cooper is so weird to me. See, that's a guy when I put him up against Kenny Galladay, is a guy that if they switched roles, I think Kenny Galladay would be better than Amari Cooper in Dallas. That doesn't matter. Let's just go back to Michael Gallup. But when Amari went down, Gallup went off. I think the majority of people are going to think that Michael Gallup is going to be the complimentary receiver there for however long that he's there. And I just think that from a fantasy perspective, Gallup is going to be really reliable in 2020. I think Calvin Ridley is right there as well with Julio, looking at the edge of the cliff with age. But that's just kind of where I'm at with Gallup and Ridley. So, Kevin, what do you think?
The Cowboys paid Amari Cooper $100 million.
Yeah.
Gallup ain't gonna be number one there. I'm sorry. I heavily disagree. I like Gallup a lot. Yeah. I like him in fantasy. Dak threw for 4,500 fucking yards last year. They're gonna throw it a ton. Mike McCarthy's there. You can totally say that Michael Gallup is going to have a breakout year and be great. He could even be top 10, but he is not gonna be the number one receiver if both are healthy for the whole year when they paid Amari Cooper $100 million.
I mean, I think it's just more of an even split, though, right? I mean,
no,
really,
no.
I don't know about that.
I think Gallup, they're both gonna have a great year. I really believe that. I think the Dallas offense is gonna be very tough to stop, and in that division, they're gonna win it behind their offense. Sutton is We'll see. We really don't know. That's the biggest question mark, I think, on this list. You know what you've got in Calvin Ridley, with Julio maybe on the decline, maybe not. You know, he's still Julio Jones. It was kind of weird. We're recording this on the day that Atlanta, last night, their uniforms leaked and everybody saw it. So they're like, fuck it, we're going to drop it today instead of next week, when they were supposed to go on the 14th. So their uniforms came out. And only a couple people were kind of making a stink of, there's no Julio in any of these photo shoots. So I saw some like rumors and stuff. Oh, Julio to the Giants, or Julio to the, you know, whoever, any random team, any random fan base is like saying trade rumors and stuff. But that might be kind of a little bit of a sign, strictly from the media photo shoot. Julio could have been sick that day. Who the fuck knows? But that Calvin Ridley is going to be the guy there. So he's been complimentary and good at that his whole career. It's time for maybe him to take the next step, and maybe Julio regressing just due to age, not because of skill or talent or anything, maybe has him there. But I think the sleeper and the opportunity for the most breakout that he already did last year, I think he's going to have an even better year this year because of his offense, and who's probably going to be throwing him the ball all 16 games, and Gardner Minshew coming from Wazoo, where they threw it at every single play, is DJ Chark. The athleticism, the week one instant contributions with Nick Foles and the touchdown catch that he had over the shoulder and stuff like that. He's just a playmaker. So you look around and go, who the hell is there with him? Nobody. Minshew picks his targets, picks his favorites. He made that a point in college. He did it in his first half season in the NFL, and they're committed to him being the guy. So I think he needs a Batman and Robin type of combination, and that's DJ Chark.
So for me, this might be a super low-hanging fruit here. And I think most people would be like, oh, didn't he already break out? But in my opinion, he has not even come close to reaching his ceiling. And we forget about it because he came into the league when he was like 20, is DJ Moore. He's going into his third year. In my opinion, he hasn't even come close to his ceiling. He has wide receiver one upside, in my opinion. Look at his profile. Look at his yards after catch ability. He's insane. The guy has it all. I love DJ Moore. And what's interesting is that Teddy Bridgewater averaged 6 yards per attempt last year in his games played with the Saints, 37th in the NFL. How many QBs are there even in the NFL? 37, maybe, that like registered a stat. So like bottom of the barrel, dead last in yards per attempt. And DJ Moore's 8.7 yards per target, like that just fits perfectly. I think he's going to get absolutely fed. He doesn't have to go deep. They're easy throws to DJ Moore. He creates separation, get him the ball, let him do the work. The one thing that could cap him a little bit is Christian McCaffrey there. And that a lot of those short passes that Teddy B likes to throw could just be dump offs to Christian McCaffrey. But come on, like, give the dude 12 targets a game, get him 10 catches. He's just insane. I love DJ Moore.
I think I'm going to agree with Kevin on the whole DJ Chark thing. See, I think DJ Chark's going to have a better year than DJ Moore. I'm not sold on Teddy B and DJ Moore in that offense. I think DJ Moore is definitely a wide receiver one alpha type of guy. With a new coach, a new system, Christian McCaffrey being the number one guy, Robbie Anderson's the addition, Curtis Samuel's still there. The ball's getting spread around. And I'm not saying that DJ Moore won't land in the top 10, because the ceiling is that. I think you're totally right on that. I'm not sold on Teddy B. I'm convinced that they have to go get somebody else for me to really buy into DJ Moore. But I think DJ Chark has the easiest route to breaking out, even though he already did that last year, and so did DJ Moore. So I'm going to stick with DJ Chark on this. I think, once again, player on a bad team with a really good situation fantasy-wise, he's my guy out of these five guys that we've talked about the most. I think just to kind of build off of Gallup a little bit more, I think that out of all of these guys, he easily has the best quarterback, and so I think there's a potential, a really good potential, for him to finish ahead of Calvin Ridley. I think there's even potential for him to finish ahead of Sutton. That may be bold for some people, and I think it's bold for me to say that, but I think that does lie there. Amari Cooper, I'm not an Amari Cooper guy, and I'm worried about about his a little bit of about his injury history, the year he had with the Raiders where he dropped a million balls. There's just too many instances where, yes, he did get paid a lot. They're going to utilize that because of how much money they paid him. I feel like Michael Gallup is sliding under the radar for just seasonal and dynasty picks. I think he's just a really good player who's got the best quarterback in this situation.
You said you think DJ Chark's going to finish ahead of DJ Moore.
Yes.
But you said DJ Moore could be top 10. So does that mean you have DJ Chark top 5?
I think that they're both at the bottom of that top 10 list. I think they're both pretty neck and neck.
Okay.
I think that, you know, I could see a DJ Moore at 10. I could see a DJ Chark at like 8.
I'm interested to see. Oh, go ahead.
Guess who I just drafted?
Hey.
DJ Chark. Only because DJ Moore went 3 picks before.
Yeah.
I think that this is going to be really interesting to have these guys getting hot on bad defensive teams where their offense is going to have to, you know, score a lot of points, throw the ball around a lot, intermixed with this rookie class that has so much talent. Like, you're going to see the NFL game start to really emulate the college game here in a couple years, hoping the season, you know, gets going and we play because of the coronavirus and stuff. But holy hell, like, what a time to be in a passing offense and be an up-and-coming receiver. If you're a first, second, third-year guy on top of this rookie class, there's a lot of guys to like. So I don't think there's a wrong answer out of this group. We can see any of them finishing in the top 5 or the top 10. But it is a changing of the guard. You know, we already lost Antonio Brown, RIP. Julio Jones is going to start tapering off soon. AJ Green, see ya. You know, the guys that have been up there for a while are starting to really fade, I think, sooner rather than later. We'll see what happens with DeAndre Hopkins. Maybe he'll have a really big year again this year, but he regressed last year too. So,
okay. We got to speed it up a little bit here. So let's move.
Let's do like 2 more.
Yeah. I want to hit this one because I can't get past it. I saw it on Twitter today. Evan Engram. We're moving on to tight end. Nobody likes to talk about tight end, but this is one I have to dive into because I'm just mind blown. April ADP has Evan Engram at tight end 4 getting drafted ahead of Zach Ertz. I'm sorry, but that is blasphemous. Blasphemous. That's wrong. That's wrong. You can come after me for that. I don't care. It's wrong. Okay. First year, Evan Engram plays 15 games. Second year, Evan Engram plays 11 games. Third year, Evan Engram plays 8 games. He goes 64 receptions, 45 receptions, 44 receptions, 722 yards, 577 yards, 467 yards. At what point do we move on to different tight end options and accept that Evan Engram is no longer in that top 5? I hate that people – I don't know if it's the name. I don't know if it's because he's young. I'm not really sure, but I would rather draft Blake Jarwin. I would rather draft Ian Thomas. I would rather draft Hayden Hurst, Austin Hooper. There are I have a huge list of tight ends I'd rather draft than Evan Engram because I know that they actually will stay on the field. Now, Austin Hooper's had the injury history, whatever. Sure, that's fine. Evan Engram can't stay on the field. If you can't stay on the field, I don't want it. So When it comes to Evan Engram, he can't be tight end 4. That can't happen. So whoever's drafting in DFL leagues, you're doing a terrible job because there are so many better options at that position. He's literally never been a tight end 5 in his 3 years that he's played. I can't imagine that he's going to find his way there. Even in the next 3 years, he has to prove it to me at this point before I want to even draft him.
Yeah, he's pretty scary to draft. Just the injury history. You kind of covered it all, Bryce. There's not a whole lot of appeal, I think, in drafting Evan Engram. You're banking on health, and that's been his main, you know, concern his whole career. He just hasn't been on the field. When he's on the field, he's great. You know, and so the start of the season, I think, is a really good time to, in seasonal leagues, maybe draft Evan Engram, not as high as where he's going. But if he falls to you, if you're in a smarter league that wants to take those more consistent, reliable tight ends later in the draft, if you can get him, you know, in the later rounds, not very possible. and then trade him after the first handful of weeks, you probably get a really good return in those, you know, family leagues, work leagues, things like that. But yeah, he's just always hurt.
Yeah. I mean, I just had him in Buffalo Dip League Dynasty League and sold him. I don't want him on my roster. Get what you can for him. He's worth like a first round pick. So I would gobble that up all day.
I just don't understand the ADP. That just means there's a lot of people out there drafting Evan Engram ahead of Zach Ertz of all people. I mean, I can name 10 tight ends that I'd rather have than Evan Engram right now. So, speaking of guys that are always injured, we're going to move into a rookie that people are very polarized on, and that's Laviska Shenault. Now, Laviska Shenault went to the combine injured, tried to do stuff injured, ultimately set himself back. That's what we know so far. What we don't know is what team is going to draft him and where they're going to draft him. If there's a possibility that he gets drafted in the third round, I would even say as late as the fourth round, are you guys buying into Laviska Shenault for the 2020 season and in dynasty formats?
For me, yes, I am. I was doing some digging today. I think I sent you guys, I don't know if I sent you guys a video of who his player comparison was. It's absurd because Laviska Shenault is a receiver. Laviska Shenault's comp was Saquon Barkley.
Whoa.
It's just absurd. He's that specimen of an athlete. He's 6'1", 227. Disregard his 40 time. He ran a 4.58 at the combine. And for him, that was terrible. It was because he was injured.
Torn groin.
I believe he had, groin. I think he had surgery after. So, and even with that, running injured, that was a 78th percentile speed score. So imagine what that chart would look like if he's healthy. It's just absurd. But unfortunately, we don't get to see him work out. He was hurt in college. He had one good college production as a sophomore. So he's an enigma. And we need to see like where he goes in the NFL draft, what team is going to buy into him. I said his comp was Saquon Barkley. That's a running back. His receiver comp is great too. It's AJ Brown on Player Profiler. So those two comps, like Saquon and AJ Brown. But it's the healthy Laviska Shenault that we're chasing after. Healthy combine, we're looking at a guy, in my opinion, who's being paired with CeeDee Lamb and Jerry Jeudy after he goes out and has a DK Metcalf like combine. I know DK slid in the draft, and that was because of that stupid shuttle time or whatever. It was total bullshit. Healthy Laviska Shenault is sexy.
Yeah, I mean, he's going to fall in your rookie drafts to the late second, early third, which is wild because he's probably one of the most athletically gifted players of the draft. So, for me, there has to be a lot of things to go right for Laviska Shenault. He has that injury history at Colorado, and that played into the combine. And so that is a little worrisome. You are chasing the healthy Laviska. And, what would be a good fit? You know, what would be a good team fit? I've been trying to pinpoint that, and it kind of feels like it would be a sneaky, sneaky, sneaky good draft pick for the Niners to grab somebody like that with another guy like Deebo Samuel, who's very versatile at his position, and they obviously need another receiving option. So a guy that can kind of do a lot of stuff in the Kyle Shanahan offense seems like a good spot scheme-wise for that type of player.
I agree, but they're almost in a situation where they need a healthy guy. Like, they just need a body. That's the risky, oh my God, the potential of this could be great. But it's almost like, you know, if they go Denzel Mims, like a bona fide, just pass catching, kind of snag everything type of guy is almost more beneficial to the offense hey, we need him when we can. But yes, Laviska Shenault in a dream situation, he's never hurt. He's going in that territory where he's a top three or four wide receiver. You just nailed it, Bryce. I think it doesn't matter where he goes, though. Like, if he is healthy, he's like a Percy Harvin. He's like this Swiss Army knife plus. You know, he's not just another dude. And just watching film and stuff like that, seeing his ability and when he has the ball, they're using him in the wildcat. They're using him out wide. They're using him inside. They're using him as a fucking running back sometimes. Like, that is if he gets with the right offensive mind with his OC and quarterback, look out. So there's a lot of teams, like I was just talking about it, the trend of the NFL is to copy this college style game, and he's going to fit right in with that.
So for me, in an all-time Bill O'Brien move, paired with Will Fuller, perfectly is that the Houston Texans take, I don't even know where they have a draft pick because all they do is fucking trade him away. But maybe in the second or the third, he falls because of his injuries, and Bill O'Brien snags the injury-prone to LaVisca. Pair with Will Fuller, LaVisca Chenault.
Oof.
Yeah, but that's another team that, you know, Will Fuller doesn't stay on the field either, you know? Like, I guess you're right, a Bill O'Brien move for sure, and it could end up working out if they did something like that. All right, so let's wrap things up with this last topic. We know running backs are where we get the bulk of our points in fantasy, so that's what we're gonna talk about here. 2020 running back targets, guys you're drafting that you have to go get. It's very clear that the running back position kind of bottoms out after 7 or 8 guys. I mean, not a lot of players you love to draft. So, you know, there's a lot of rookies that are getting drafted pretty high now because of that in particular. So I'm going to just – I'll pass this off. I'll finish off my guys that I'm going after. But let's go with – we'll start with Chase. And what running backs are you targeting for the 2020 season?
Yeah, so I really wanted to take this one because of the drafts that I've done so far. Like I was saying at the beginning of the podcast, is that when you're doing these drafts, you can see where guys are going and what people are thinking of them. So my three, I'm going to skip over the first one because I've already raved about him, is Miles Sanders. I'm not even going to talk about him. I'm just going to throw that name out there. Get Miles Sanders in your drafts. Second one, Alvin Kamara. In 2019, Alvin Kamara was number 26 for running backs in touchdowns. We look for that to bounce back because of regression. And in this draft that just happened right now, 10-team draft, Alvin Kamara just went at 202. He was almost a guaranteed top 4 pick last year with Saquon, Zeke, and CMC. He was normally the third or the fourth running back off the board. He's fallen to the 202 now. So that is if you're 109, 202, and you want to go running back, and you can pair up a guy like – I mean, I would take Joe Mixon there. You can see other guys fall there, but like Joe Mixon, Alvin Kamara start, that's juicy. And then my third one is Leonard Fournette. What's interesting about the similarity between these two, Alvin Kamara and Leonard Fournette, is they didn't score any touchdowns last year. And like I said with Alvin Kamara, is that we look for touchdown regression, and that the guys that scored a bunch of touchdowns, like Aaron Jones, they're going to regress back to the mean. And people are drafting Aaron Jones outrageously. He went in the first round of this draft. It's just unbelievable, especially with Green Bay coming out and saying that they want to use 3 running backs. So touchdowns is where you look for regression and come back to the mean. Leonard Fournette scored 3 touchdowns in 2019, and he was RB7. 3 touchdowns, he was RB7. Is he bad at running it in from the 1 yard line? No, the dude's a tank. Like, it's just unlucky. And he's going to bounce back too. And in a draft I did a couple of nights ago, he was RB15. He went at RB15 in a best ball draft. And Aaron Jones is going in the first. It's unbelievable. So Miles Sanders, Alvin Kamara, Leonard Fournette.
Yeah, that's a really solid list. And I mean, you tapped into guys that aren't going in the 101, the 102, stuff like that. It's not Zeke or McCaffrey. You know, those guys land in your lap given on draft order or however you determine the order of your draft. I got a sleeper and a guy that I don't think that our podcast is that high on. He's been passed around in our league a ton. But if they end up not taking a running back in the draft or making another free agent move, given what's going on with coronavirus and not being able to get medicals on guys and stuff.
If you say Chris Carson,
it's not.
If you say Todd Gurley.
It's not Todd Gurley. It's Marlon Mack. If they don't end up drafting somebody, like contract year for Marlon Mack with Phillip Rivers and a healthy offensive line, like he's actually solid. Like, couple 100-yard games, he busted out with 174 in the first week of the season, and then he was kind of battling injury the rest of the year. So I just feel like in that offense, Marlon Mack, if they don't draft anybody else, he could be a guy that you could get super late in the draft. You know, we're talking 7th, 8th, 9th round, still getting a running back in a seasonal league. You know, take advantage of that. He's a guy that I think a lot of people are kind of giving up on just because he's been, you know, banged up. I think he broke his wrist last season. So don't sleep on, you know, don't draft him too early. But if he's fallen, I'm super enticed by him. I kind of want to lean in on the Derrick Henry for 2020. You know, it worked at the end of last year. We're just going to roll in and do it again this year. Do I think he finishes as well as he did and lead the league in rushing? No. But Derrick Henry is a 2020 guy that I'm kind of high on and was targeting him in a couple drafts. But it comes back to Alvin Kamara and Leonard Fournette, I think, way before them. You know, in your drafts, you should be getting running backs early because the drop-off is so significant. And Derrick Henry is going to be going higher than where I would want to pick him because of how he finished last season and his kind of relevance in the postseason as well, being an absolute beast. So if you've got those early first round picks in a seasonal league, you got to be looking for Kamara followed up with Fournette. I think that's the dream situation.
Yeah, that's definitely ideal. Just to be a little different here and kind of how I feel too. I think Josh Jacobs, great pick. I feel like he's kind of going, he's not under the radar, but he's definitely not in the first round. He's more mid second to later second in your seasonal or best ball drafts. I think that he's going to get the same amount of volume that he got last year. Hopefully he stays healthy this whole season. They want to involve him in the passing game more often, which is huge for him, and he can handle it. We know that. I think another guy that is still going late, and it's because of the question mark and the landing spot, I think Jonathan Taylor is still one of those guys that you can take a gamble on as an RB who has a top 15 RB potential and maybe even top 10, depending on where he goes. Really, really just all in on Jonathan Taylor right now, and I don't think it matters what landing spot he gets. I'll have you know, Kevin has been saying since the beginning of 2019 season that Marlon Mack is going to stay with the Colts, and he stuck by that. And I was telling him that, you know, he's a replaceable running back. Why wouldn't they just draft a guy? And Kevin just made it clear that this is the NFL. The teams just don't really think that way. So Marlon Mack, I could see that being a great pick. I actually think Melvin Gordon still I'm just stuck on the Broncos today, man. I just can't get off them. Yeah, I know, right? I guess it's been like the past couple months. I just am so sold on the team right now. I just
Bryce
want to believe.
Couldn't touch Melvin Gordon with a
no.
6 foot
no,
social distancing pole.
Well,
now he's hopping on that pole.
I'm just saying
Melvin Gordon.
He's going later than a lot of running backs. He's a good value pick. Philip Lindsay's now the RB2 there. It just seems right. I think maybe why I'm so high on Denver is because last year I knew what that team was. I knew that it was not going to be a good season. And now I'm just refreshed. You know, there's some hope that we don't have all these losses on our record. We've got a new season going into, and I just think that the Broncos are going to be kind of sneaky good. So, I think Melvin Gordon, Josh Jacobs, Jonathan Taylor, those are my three later round guys that have really good potential for the 2020 season. All right, up next to round out the show, your favorite small school rookie wide receiver or player. Chase is going to take control on this one. He's the one who does the deep dive in. So, Chase, what's on your list?
So that is a great way to put it in wide receiver or player, because we've talked about him briefly in our mock draft. Antonio Gibson, wide receiver, running back, kick returner from Memphis, 6 foot, 228, 4.39 40, 99th percentile speed score. Player profiler comp, Joe Mixon. What I see happening with him in the draft is interesting, and I like this guy a lot, is Jalen Hurd went in the third to the San Francisco 49ers last year, sort of a utility guy. He could, I would not be surprised if come third round that we see a team grab Antonio Gibson. He could get the draft capital like we saw with Jalen Hurd, that Swiss Army knife build. What's interesting with Antonio Gibson is he had 33 carries on the year and 38 receptions. 33 carries, 369 yards, 11.2 yards per carry, 19.3 yards per reception, 12 TDs. He scored a touchdown on 17% of the times that this guy touched the ball. 1,104 yards on 71 touches, 23 kick returns for 645, 28 yard average and a touchdown. I'd love to see him used all over the place. I'd really like to just see him used as a running back. And another deep nugget on Antonio Gibson is that all time, he is the fifth best speed score behind Bo Jackson and Saquon Barkley and ahead of Herschel Walker and Jonathan Taylor. So I love this guy. Keep your eye out for him on draft day. I wouldn't be surprised if he went in the second round, honestly. I think he's that good. See a team trade up for him. It could be a Mecole Hardman shock type thing where some of you are like, who the hell is Antonio Gibson? He's legit. And then my second one, very small school, Isaiah Coulter, wide receiver from Rhode Island, 6'2", 200, 4'4", 5'40". Very weak competition at Rhode Island, right? I don't even know who the hell they're playing. They're probably playing the John Hopkins lacrosse team, padded up in football pads for all I fucking know. I don't even know who the hell they're playing. The competition is weak. He had no production as a freshman or a sophomore, but as a junior, he put up this last year 72 for 1,039 and 8 touchdowns. Why didn't he have any production as a freshman or sophomore? The dude was playing linebacker. So he transitioned into receiver as a true freshman. So he's never played right. He's been playing wide receiver for 3 years. One of the knocks on him is that he's a body catcher. He doesn't use his hands well. It's like, well, no shit. The dude was hitting people since high school. He doesn't know how to play wide receiver. So I really like just the size, 6'2", 200, the speed, 4'4", 5'40". The lack of competition is interesting because in one of their bigger games this year, one of their biggest competitions was against Virginia Tech. He put up 9 for 152. So we've seen a little bit of production there against a bigger school and not John Hopkins. And one reason why his profile doesn't look ridiculous is in that it should is that he had a DK Metcalf shuttle time. It was like a second or third percentile thing where we saw that with Jalen Reagor too, and heard that, you know, some of the testing, some of the times might have been flawed and guys knew it and they didn't, or they don't even really care about those. So keep your eye on out, keep your eye open for Antonio Gibson, Isaiah Coulter. Those are my two small school dudes.
All right, everybody, that's gonna wrap it up for the show today. We will keep it coming. We told you we would.